Hey, what's going on? This is Jeremy Thone, Marketing Director of 3PL Systems and host of 3PL Live. I'm excited to share an interview with Liz Hoblitzel. Liz works as an agent over at Cross Logistics. She used to have her own bond and her own logistics company, but she started to team up with the folks over at Cross. We talk about in this conversation on how to stand out as a freight broker. A few things that Liz recommends doing is her role is based on three legs: price, technology, and service. And I will say she does go beyond for service. She had mentioned going out to the Estes terminal to find a lost shipment for her customer. She brought the Estes folks food, and that actually helped. They figured out where the shipment was within an hour. And as far as actually getting new clients, she mentions the law of reciprocation, which is something that Dr. Robert Cialdini talks about in his book. She talked about bringing food over, edible arrangements, donuts, and even something as simple as an Amazon book to build a relationship with her customers. Anyways, I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, Liz, thanks for coming on to 3PL Live. I am excited to talk to you. For those that don't know you, would you just mind introducing yourself, how you got into the freight industry and what you do?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Jeremy. And I'm very excited to talk to you also. My name is Liz Hoblitzel, and I'm the owner of Logistics LLC. I'm an independent rep, basically, so a contracted salesperson. I've been selling for Cross Logistics for about the past year and a half. Before that, I was with another 3PL for about 7 years, same situation, independent rep. The way I got in the freight business was I was getting my master's degree, and I met somebody who worked for a van line, United Van Lines, and she helped me get an interview, got a job, and just fell in love with booking freight and being a broker. I called my parents the first day I ever set up a truck to show up somewhere, and I said, I figured out what I want to do with the rest of my life.
Yeah, it's been a crazy year. I know that we were kind of, before we started talking, like Convoy went under, today the news came out that they had got under, and they were like valued at something like a couple billion dollars. They had like $260 million in funding, like recent round Series E. So that whole thing was just kind of bananas. I think there was like an Estes cyber attack. YRC went out of business this year. It's been a pretty wild year. But how did you end up like staying in it? And like, what was your first kind of, I guess, experience or go around with it?
Well, I was at United Van Lines, and that was a good place to learn. I wanted to do more, and I just didn't understand how to move up there. It's a large, pretty large company.
And is that mainly truckload?
They're actually mainly household goods.
Okay.
But I was on the logistics side. So it was a lot of like electronics, trade shows, kind of that specialty freight that nobody wants.
Sure.
And because we were a van line, those drivers will actually wrap things in padded blankets, and they'll do more than what truck driver would do. So we got a lot of specialty freight. And then I went and started a truck brokerage for an air freight company. They had been just outsourced, you know, basically just give it to an outside broker anytime they had a truckload. And they hired me to basically keep it in-house. And that was so successful. And at the time I was pregnant. And when you're pregnant, you're not supposed to drink. So I had a lot of free time, let's say, dreaming about starting logistics. And I always had the name in mind. And I started you see these loads coming in and you're just booking them. So you think that getting those loads to come in is not hard, but that's actually the hardest part. But I didn't get that. So I started logistics right after I had my daughter. That was about just over 9 years ago. Well, let me tell you, the hard part is getting someone to give you the freight. Hard to book it too. Everything about it is, it's like pulling teeth, really.
Let's talk about that logistics actually for a minute there. Like how did you get it set up, I guess, for one, like the structure of it? Are you using someone else to like another broker, or is that your own thing, or how does that work? And then how do you go out and get clients actually? Like that is really hard. I've done it before. It's not easy. So how do you approach it?
Well, logistics originally was full service freight broker where I had an MC number. I had a $75,000 surety bond.
Oh, damn.
I, you know, was working out of my basement at the time. What I learned from that is you can't be all by yourself. You need support. So I really wasn't confident enough to hire somebody and be responsible for their lifestyle too and their livelihood.
Yeah,
so I went and started selling for someone, and I let my broker's license, after a couple of years, I let it just go away. So I sell under somebody else's name, and then they pay my business a commission, basically a percentage of the profit.
I know that like differentiating yourself is definitely hard being a rep. Like it seems to me like when I was like doing it, it seemed like a lot of the times it was like relationships. People would just, I had a one lady that was like an aircraft engine buyer and they were class 85. It would go FAK 50. Mm-hmm. It was a really nice setup. And she had like a, when YRC was around, she had like a 50% discount. So I was give her like a 70% discount and then I would use like Saya or something like that or Estes. And it was like way cheaper and it worked out really nicely. But I guess, how do you go about like knowing like what freight to go after? I know I'm asking a lot of things here, so you can kind of just take what you want. But like, how do you know like what to go after as far as like the freight goes? And like, how do you build those relationships or differentiate yourself for some of these shippers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So just looking for something for taxes, I came across this. This is two years of sales calls, cold call, walk in the door, knock on the door. If I can't get anywhere, first, you know, always the goal is to have an appointment. But good luck with that. So that's just walk-ins. Who's in charge of freight, you know, and 90% of the time they go, oh, everything's customer routed. So that means go away. We don't want anything to do with you. So you just keep going and try to get an appointment and try different things, you know, bring some pretzel bites from the local shop, bring some fruit basket, like what do they call those? Edible arrangements. So a lot of, in my, like what I do is I spend a lot of money. Giving presents and something that where they feel a little bit obligated to reciprocate, at least give you time. As a freight broker, you're one of many calling on them. But I think when you actually show up and they see your face, it's a lot harder to say, go away in person. But I mean, it happens all the time. I've been told to leave.
You know, my dad used to always tell me to go to the back of the warehouse. Oh, yeah. That sometimes it worked, like just avoid the people in the front and just kind of go to the back or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree with you. Bring like some treats or whatever and like do whatever you can there. Mm-hmm. It's hard though. It's not easy at all when you're when you're doing that. Is it a lot of it relationships or is the price? My dad's ex-partner would always tell me that, oh, you can't compete on price. Price is like a race to the death. But to some sort of degree though, I do agree with them, but it doesn't the price somewhat have to work though within like your context of like the situation? Because sometimes people just get stupid rates.
If someone's just strictly price shopping, you're not going to change their mind. But I think that there's, you know, there's kind of three legs that I stand on, and it's price, technology, and service. And as you know, we have some great technology. I'll also say, these days, if you don't have technology, you're not even going to be considered. But the service is key. That's what I sell more than anything because, I'm probably not going to be the cheapest on every single load out there, but we do know what we're doing. We're really good at negotiating rates for our customers, getting the FAKs. I think I told you we negotiate fuel too, so that we're only paying about half what the U.S. Department of Transportation fuel surcharge is technically supposed to be right now. And across the board, we pay about half that. And
that's
we just
pretty
pass that along to our customers. We negotiate accessorials. We negotiate a lot of things so that, you know, every year when those increases come, we're not on current rates. We're on a different rate base so that they can't just arbitrarily take an increase on us. But I think a lot of it is making that contact and getting someone to trust you, that you really do have their best interest at heart. Like I'm not going to get rich off one customer. I'm not going to we don't make our customers sign contracts, which I think is a little bit unusual for a logistics company. Maybe not. My sell on that is you can walk away anytime you want. I want to keep earning your business. I'm going to do that by providing the kind of service that you're not going to get anywhere else. You talked about Estes. So we had an issue with an Estes shipment. I literally went to the terminal in St. Louis today, this morning, with my, what made me think, pretzel boys. Do you guys have pretzel boys?
Mm-mm, but I do love pretzels. You eat like the warm kind of.
You guys probably don't have that in California.
They just serve fruit. I love carbs too.
So I came in with, you know, $50 worth of food and said, thanks for everything you guys are doing. Because I know it's been a rough few weeks for them internally. But I had the freight that I needed delivered for my biggest customer. They found it within me 1 hour of being there. And I don't think show me another freight broker that's going to go to the terminal and talk to the head of the terminal and head of OS&D and the rep that we currently work with. I don't think anyone's going to go to that level to take care of their clients, but I will. And I hope that they remember that whenever they get 30 calls a week.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting too, because I think there's a book called Influence. It's by Dr. Robert Cialdini. And it's interesting because in that book, he talks about like this thing called like the law. I love that. That's a great book. It's one of my favorites. She's got it right there for those that can't see that. But that whole thing, that whole law of reciprocation works. I mean, yeah. I know it in real time. Like I'll leave like a comment on someone's LinkedIn post and within like a day or so, like someone else will probably leave a comment on your post. And I mean, that's like a simple example of it. And it's just like anything in life. I feel like if people don't reciprocate, then that's kind of a sign that's like probably a taker potentially, or someone that you might not, if they're not, they're probably not functioning as normal as they should be if they aren't reciprocating. So that is a really great strategy to use, I think, in sales as well. And then going the extra mile, talk a little bit more about like going the extra mile too, because I feel like that thing that you did about going to the OSMD and like going to the terminal there, have you done any other, like I've heard random stories of people like driving cross country to go pick up some like jet skis or I don't know, like whatever crazy, do you have any other like war stories like that you've done to like try to get, I know that you offline too, like you had mentioned one of your clients, you went there for like 3 years in a row, I believe, until like 4 years. Yeah. So tell me, walk me through that one.
Oh, okay. So that was just, I had a, well, you talked about going in the back door. So there was this, how I find clients is I look at who has docks, where are these industrial areas? You know, people get excited about different things, but I get excited when I see an industrial park.
You it's know? Your architecture.
I'm like, woo!
You're like dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. So I look for that. There was one company for whatever reason, I kept going there and I kept going to the front door and it wasn't working. Well, we bought a new house and my, you know, house payment was going to go from this amount to this amount. And I'm like, I better step up my game.
Yeah.
So I went to the back door and it was just great timing because the guy in that company said, oh, actually the owner was just here and said, we need to find a new logistics company. And this guy, I had emailed him and called him and tried through the front door and he never responded to anything. But the face-to-face, everything I said made sense to him and it was what they were looking for. And it still took a few months to get him. That's one company. The company that the owner's brother owns is next door and it's even bigger. And so whenever I'd go see my one customer, I'd go next door to the brother's company and see those people. And it was kind of the same thing, you know, go to the front door, try to get an appointment. There was a lady there and a warehouse guy there that just were nice to me. So if you're nice to me, be careful because I'm going to keep coming around. And I'm not going to be annoying. I'm not going to come somewhere. Sure. Three times a week. I mean, definitely not. But once a month, every other month for four years, you know, I gave them hockey tickets. I took them to lunch. I sent, if we talked about a book one day, I'd send them the book on Amazon. I just anything I could think of to curry their favor, let's say. Sure. And in the meantime, you know, learning more and more about their business and what their pain points were, because frankly, everyone is selling. They try to sell what they sell. But really what we need to do as salespeople, I believe, is listen for what is this customer having problems with and how can I solve those problems? Because no one cares about all your cool crap. They care about themselves and how can you help me? Like no one has time to call salespeople back to be like, oh, thanks for coming by. Like that's not going to happen. It's like, can you help me with these problems? And it takes a long time for anyone to even tell you what their problems are.
Yeah, it's the art of active listening, really, because like I think that a lot of people don't listen. They listen, but they're not really actively listening. They're like trying to think about what they want to say next, essentially, instead of actually. And a lot of the times I think the prospects will tell us everything that we need to know. It's just a matter of us like quieting down and like not, because I think it's just like this natural tug of like anxiety of like wanting to fill the empty space or whatever, like the quietness. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I feel like you don't need to fill it. Sometimes it's just like as simple as like saying the price maybe and like not saying anything after and being confident with it and things like that. Just, and it's hard though, because like, I don't know. I think a lot of sales is like psychology to some sort of degree. It's like applied psychology of like knowing like even things like scarcity, like, you know, like how I'm sure that scarcity comes up occasionally, like though this is the rate right now. And it's true though. Like the rates change like in freight, like every day, depending on like supply and demand. So everything is kind of shifting constantly. I also think that like, I remember you told me something about like asking more and more questions too, because it seemed like I feel like you told me a story about like one of like the VPs wouldn't give you like the information. Oh, yeah. Then all of a sudden like they gave you like the bills and that was enough to like, but they said that, oh, the contract was like, but then you followed up with another question.
Yeah. Well, they kept telling me, so this one company in particular, the one that took me 4 years, that I finally got, you know, a year plus ago, just went to lunch with their new shipping lady. So I got to get in good with her.
Sure.
To make sure, because, you know, changes are always scary for someone like me, because you don't want anyone to come in and try to be like a big shot and make all
bring
these
their people.
Changes. And she's super nice. And we're getting along great. Early on, they had told me that they were in a contract with another 3PL. I just kept asking questions about it. And sometimes people think, like in this instance, I'll just tell you them, they thought they were in a contract. I was there for, you know, the fourth year in a row trying to do something. And the guy was like, Liz, I know you've done everything and you've spent so much time. And I just want to be upfront with you. We're in this contract and we're not going to change. And do you want to go talk to the VP right now? And I was like, yeah. He's like, I'd rather just, you know, him tell you to your face. So I'm sitting across from the VP. And at this point, I mean, I have absolutely nothing to lose, right? Because I don't have the business anyway. And it's been 4 years. He's like, yeah, I mean, we're just in this contract. And I'm like, do you have the contract? He goes, yeah, it's right here. And I go, can I see it? So I mm-hmm. took it from him and I was looking through it. And the last time he had signed was like at least 10 years prior. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I didn't have to read one more sentence. I'm like, there's no way they're in a 10-year contract. I'm like, this is trash. You can throw this away. And you can
yeah, that's wild.
Work with me. And they were like, it was like a confetti party. They were like, oh, cool. We thought we were in a contract. I'm like, no, let's do our process. And down the road, if they want to bring up that they think you're in a contract, first of all, it's not going to happen because you signed 10 years ago plus. And second of all, I mean, they haven't done a good job because I've listened to everything that their shipping people say and they've done almost nothing. So,
and then the rep got mad too, right? The one that lost the account, I think, didn't they like disparage the account after too?
Yeah. The guy that is like the owner of a very large logistics company or the founder, whatever he is, like I've seen him quoted on different freight publications. Yes. And he wrote a most scathing email, like so insulting to the customer. Instead of thanks for 16 years of business, I'm sorry we couldn't do what you needed. And, you know, is there anything we can do? Can I? It was just like rude and condescending. And it was unbelievable. I was angry.
That's not going to help his situation.
I couldn't believe someone, because to me, I would be in a different boat. I would be trying to keep the business and, you know, do everything that we weren't doing. I mean, it's kind of too little too late by then, but I would still at least be kind and grateful for all the years of millions and millions of dollars of freight revenue.
Yeah, that's super weird. I mean, I guess common sense is not that common for some people. It's like a really...
Well, they kept wanting more carriers and they had never been asked to sign like a letter of authority giving that company permission to go out and shop rates in the LTL market. Had that ever been brought up, I'm sure that company would have been happy to sign a letter of authority and say, yeah, let them shop. But they never asked for one because a customer isn't going to know that you as a third-party logistics company need a letter of authority. Like the customer wouldn't know, hey, let me give you this. It's like, you've got to ask for that. They don't just know about it.
It's interesting too. You brought up like face-to-face, which I think is interesting because it just seems like we have like email, we have phone, text, and face-to-face and some of these video tools or whatever. So I'm thinking like, do you think that like, it seems like the video or just face-to-face in general, like just seems to work better if you can, for some reason. I don't know if it's just because it humanizes the experience, like for some reason, is that you think what it is or?
Yeah. Well, I think again, it's a lot harder to be different if you're on the phone. And if you're emailing, I mean, that's right there with it. It's just not personal. And if you're in person, at least they'll go, oh, there's that lady with the frizzy blonde hair that keeps coming here. You know what I mean?
How do you approach too? Like, I feel like the approach part's always a little hard too. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Sometimes people could be just rude, you know, and like, and you know that you could feel their like energy of like, they're just being like nasty or whatever. And I've seen people deflect that kind of stuff, but I tend to get like a little nervous in those situations. Like people are, or do you just...
pit stains on all my clothes. Okay. So if I'm acting like I'm not nervous when I'm approaching someone, I mean, I am. I'm still, this sounds probably really dumb, but I'm still nervous going in to see current clients.
Sure.
I think that's human nature to be a little bit on edge because you know that I wasn't invited in today. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You're showing up. You know, I really don't have an invitation to be there. So it's a little uncomfortable. You definitely run into people that their energy is rude and hateful. And I mean, my one client that I was at the terminal today to help, the lady, for some reason, the shipping guy, he was just overwhelmed. And I caught, you know, timing is everything, but also being at the right place at the right time and going, even if you get no business for 6 months. So I was showing up. I had a very loose appointment. I was like, I'm going to be in your area tomorrow. Is that okay? And he was like, well, I mean, you can stop by if you want, but I'm not promising I'm going to have time. I was like, oh, that's fine. I'm just going to drop in, introduce myself. Take 5 or 10 minutes. That's the key.
Mm, yeah, that's fair.
5 or 10 minutes, you skedaddle unless it's going well and you can, you know, try to. And I was just listening and everything he was talking about. I'm like, you guys need a logistics company. And he was like, well, we are totally against logistics companies. That's how they feel about it here. And it's never going to happen. And we talked for like 2.5 hours and it was kind of an out of body experience.
Interesting.
I just felt like, oh my gosh, like everything that we have, he needs. The stars aligned, God is good. And he set me up with a meeting with everyone important in their decision-making team. And at that first meeting, the one lady who's now a very good friend, she was like, she did not want to hear it. You know what I mean? She's like, the only reason I'm here is because he wanted you here. And over time, that she's like, wow, she did a testimony video for me saying what a great job we've done for them. Because, you know, what you don't know, you don't know. And if you are just totally against something that you don't understand, I'm here to say that we're not just bottom feeders. We actually provide value. And a logistics company is not right for every company. But the people that have used us, that have met us, and have spent a little time working with us, they are like, wow, could not do this without you guys. Or we'd have to hire 6 people.
Going back to like knowing, like when you have someone that's like a tough prospect, how do you know like when to stop asking questions and when you can keep on digging? Because it seemed like that extra question that you mentioned earlier where you found out when the contract was, that allowed you to like understand their position. But it seems like sometimes like when we're trying to find out these questions that we need, sometimes people come across as like robotic because they're either like going from a list and they're trying to check off all these like things or whatever. Do you just use your intuition for as far as like knowing how far to push and how far to pull?
Yeah. Absolutely. I totally just, yeah, if you feel like somebody is looking at their phone or, you know, looking at their computer and typing while you're in their office, I mean, it's time to go. It's time to go. And you know what? I'm a firm believer too that hardly anybody is going to give you the amount of freight that you want and need from a company in the first few visits. Like there's like a long process of building rapport, building trust, and yeah, you just come, and when you feel like you're losing them, you get out fast and come back in a month.
How do you build trust too? I mean, I think is it the act of coming back and then just not being, I don't know, just being like a decent person and then just like not being too overly aggressive, but consistent? Is that kind of the way to think about it?
I think consistency is good. I think being able to read people is really good. And if someone, you know, you caught them on a bad day or at a bad time, you know, you just know it's not a good time for them. And I think the other key is it's very hard to do and it takes many years, but don't take anything personally. We're all busy. We all have a lot of hats we're wearing, and entertaining salespeople is not one that most people are willing to do often. And also just being confident in what you have and not taking their rejection from a prior date. Don't bring it into this new call, because I know what I'm selling. I know it's a good product and a good service. And whether or not you sign up with me, I'm doing great. My company's doing great. My clients are happy. Like this is legit. And whether or not they want to come with me, that's not my decision.
That's fair.
Just be respectful and always grateful and appreciative of their time. Because for anyone to talk to a salesperson for 5 minutes, that's an accomplishment for a salesperson.
How do you get confident when, I guess, you have confidence, I believe, from your experience, I guess, but when you were doing it, when you were newer, I guess, and more green, how would you recommend getting confidence?
Praying to God a lot and just fake it till you make it. Hopefully, you know your business. If you're going out and trying to sell business you don't understand, you're probably not going to be very successful, but I think it helped me being on the operation side for years and years. Mm-hmm. And actually doing the real work that it takes to book trucks and move freight. Yeah, I think I just faked it. I'm not going to lie. I came into my car after I'd go on a sales call and got rejected. I'd get in my car and like cry.
Yeah, it's fair. It's tough.
I didn't know how to handle that rejection, but you know, I'm there to do my job, and my job is not to talk about, you know, myself, my family, anything. Listen, like you said.
Listen and open.
They tell you what they need. And I always take tons of notes, which I think you saw with my little stack of papers. Tons of notes, try to remember. And then I think it really helpful too is read back over those notes, and there'll be something that pops out that's like, they're having this problem that you didn't catch. But if you were taking notes, you can catch it later and go, oh, I'm selling to these three things. Like, they're having issues with damages, they're having issues with customer service, and they're having issues with billing. So, you know, you just listen for those key things. And really, even though we offer a lot more than a few of those little issues, I'm selling to those things that they said they're having problems with.
How often is like billing an issue? Like, because I see like a lot of these companies doing these like free payment and audit things. Like, is it really like a lot of bills get messed up?
Yeah. All the time.
Why is that? Is it just human error, or is it like kind of like designed that way?
That's a really good question. I don't really know why. I think a lot of it has to do with, well, actually, I do know why. A lot of times the bill of lading is not clear on who to bill. So like an LTL company will have your customer set up as bill to your customer. They'll have them set up as bill to the company I sell for, which is Cross Logistics. My customer, care of Cross Logistics, and they'll have them set up as your customer, care of their other logistics company. So I think sometimes the billing people just type in the name of the billing company and they just grab whatever pulls up. But really, there might be like five accounts listed under one company name. So like a lot of times my customers will get a bill directly to them that should have came to us, and they'll price it without all the discounts and all the good rates. And my customer will be like, oh my gosh, this thing's $5,000. Can you help? And yeah, we can. And it'll probably cost $30-$40 to get the bill of lading correction, but it's still going to save you thousands of dollars. So it's worth it.
It's interesting. And
it happens all the time. Dale,
do you think that a lot of people don't know that's happening and it's just sort of not paying attention?
Yes. I think that happens a lot. A lot of billing things, customers don't know what they don't know, right? You know, that's been why I like to actually see freight bills and make copies. And, you know, the one day I walked out with a ton of freight bill copies when I went in to get rejected, you know, I told them to throw their contract in the trash. I saw all these freight bills, and it's helpful to see, you know, how they're getting charged for fuel, how they're getting charged for liftgate or residential delivery. Are they getting charged for reway? Just all the little charges. And as a logistics company, we're experts at spotting that stuff, and we can get those reduced. So I think a lot of people think like, oh, you pay more with a logistics company, but really you probably pay less. And even if you pay the same or a little more, the amount of service going on behind the scenes is so valuable. And people that really use a logistics company like ours, they're just amazed how much we do.
Got one last question for you. What about like claims? Like, I know that claims happen no matter what, just probably a certain percentage of the freight's going to get damaged just from like statistics. But like, how do you like look out for that as far as like just taking detailed notes probably for like the shipment details and things like that and making sure it's the right class, weight, et cetera, the proper class, all that kind of stuff? Is that kind of like the way you think about that? Or how do you mitigate for, I guess, making sure that it's insured properly too and potentially buying supplemental insurance?
Claims are a big problem. I think the most important thing is packaging, how you're packaging your freight. And if someone says like, oh, we have tons of damages, well, something's wrong. You shouldn't have tons of damages. Maybe you're not packaging your freight for LTL transport, which LTL transport's spoke and hub, you know, so it's going from terminal to terminal, offloading, onloading, offloading, onloading. So you better think of your freight as like, it's not being treated with kid gloves, quite frankly, if it's moving through
it's
the LTL system. And the other part that you have to know, people in receiving have to be trained to not just blindly sign. The LTL carrier drops your shipment, they give you the paperwork, and they want you to just sign it and so they can go to their next delivery. But you have to do your due diligence as a receiving person and make sure, hey, I mean, we should really be careful too on the bill of lading, how we state what the product is. It should be 8 boxes on this pallet so that your receiving person goes 1, 2, you know, and then they can sign. And if something's not right or something's missing or they notice like the shrink wrap is looks like it's been popped open or something, like a forklift has little, looks like the box is ripped. If anything like that, take pictures, sign with the problems that you saw. If you sign it as free and clear, good luck. And, you know, count the numbers and notice things, take pictures. And I mean, the worst case scenario is you figure it out after the guy goes. You have to notify the carrier within 5 days in writing. So if you come back to me in a month and it happens. In those cases, I'll file a claim, but that delivery receipt signed, if you sign for it without any notations and you don't notify anyone within 5 days, you're basically not going to get paid. And it's still, you know, there are limits to liability. So if your shipment is worth $10,000 and it's 200 pounds, you're probably insured $5 a pound, which is $1,000. You have extremely high dollar stuff. You might want to not ship LTL. You just have to, I think that's when a logistics company is really helpful too, is just, I told a lady this one day, tell us what we're up against so we can give you options and then you can make the decision. Because we don't know, we're shipping hundreds of shipments. Just my clients alone are shipping over 600 loads a month. So a lot of freight is moving that, you know, we don't know the backstory on all of it.
So it sounds like you kind of need to know like the value of it, like how stowable it is, like how, if it's packaged correctly to go into this like LTL hub and spoke world. So yeah, in general, I get what you're saying. So it's just kind of like making sure that all your T's are crossed and that kind of thing. It's interesting too, because I feel like some people probably, you almost need to be like more of like an accountant or like an auditor to some sort of degree. It sounds like when you're signing the paperwork to make sure it doesn't say like shrink wrap pallet or like count matches the count on the bill of lading.
Yeah.
It's interesting like how you have to be like so careful now with and detailed with some of this stuff. And maybe it's just also educating the shipper and the receiver on that as well. Is that part of it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I feel like my clients, I mean, you know, if you really want to get real technical, you just refuse the freight and say, I'm not taking it. But then if most of it's okay and there's like one damage thing, you know, are you shooting yourself in the foot by not taking what you can? There is definitely a learning curve, and freight on the surface, 80%, 85% of stuff is moving just fine. You don't have any issues, no problems. But it's that, you know, that small percentage that isn't going well, that mistakes can be very, very, very expensive. So I urge my folks, especially because a lot of times deliveries happen around lunchtime, like leave
people are hungry.
Person on the dock to sign for stuff, because I mean, I cannot tell you, Jeremy, how many times people are like, file a claim, it's been 2 months and we signed for it. I'm like, oh, okay. But yes, you're right. It's a good opportunity to educate. And a lot of times, unfortunately, we learn because
it the hard way
before.
One last question. So if you don't take, let's just say you do reject it, and you, is there some sort of reason why you would want to take the good stuff that you can take and then just reject the stuff that you can't? Or is there some sort of liability reason for that?
Well, if you need the product and most of it's intact, I would probably accept the load with all the notes. If you can wait, you could reject the whole load. So I think it's really just a judgment call at that point. But, you know, a lot of these big companies, there's too many people, too many cooks in the kitchen, like they say, and they don't know, these people don't know what these people need. So, you know, they take the load, and most people don't reject loads. And I'm not even saying that's a great idea, but I have a customer that if it's not right, they're rejecting the whole thing.
That's fair.
They don't
want to
get stuck with the claim.
Right. I get it. Yeah. I was just curious, like, why people would do one versus the other. That was a really fun conversation, Liz. I appreciate it. Where do we send people if they want to get any rate quotes from you or use your logistics services?
Question. Probably the easiest way to get a hold of me is cell phone, text, or phone call, 314-920-8675. And the other easy way would be email. Like I said, I sell through Cross Logistics. So that's Liz, L-I-Z, at Cross, C-R-O-S-S. logisticsllc.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was fun to talk to you, Jeremy.
Thanks for sticking around to the end of that session with Liz Hoblitzel of Liz Logistics and Cross Logistics. Hope you enjoyed that interview. It's always interesting. It's been a rough couple weeks, actually, for the freight industry with Convoy going under. Heard their tech stack was actually bought by the folks over at Flexport. So that was kind of an interesting thing that happened at the last minute. It's kind of a danger zone out there right now. So I hope everyone is staying safe and is having a good time. And if you enjoy 3PL Live, please make sure to tell your friends about us, review us on Spotify or Apple. That just helps other people find out about the show. We are actually going to start looking for sponsors as well. If you're interested in potentially working with us, shoot me an email, jeremy@3plsystems.com. We're actually talking about having the logo on every episode and then pre-roll ads, things of that nature as well. So if you're in the freight industry and looking to get in front of more freight folks, hit me up. Thanks. Have a good weekend.